Ping. OS News, episode number 11. This is Sunday, May the 31st, 2009. And before we forget, I always keep doing this. I'm Croc Kamen, and as usual, I'm joined by...
Tom Howard.
And what should we start with? Well, we were hoping to get David Adams, head OS News guy, on today, but we're having some strange iChat problems, and he's run out of time, so we're going to see what we can do and try and work out something for next week, because it would be good to have him speak, have some more people on the show, of course. Mm-hmm. I think what we want to start with is we did get a couple of emails about last week's show, so let's get those out of the way before we start the actual topics.
Yeah. Let's start with the one we received first, which is from Jamie Downs about the iPhone, because we kind of went on a little rant there, especially me. against the iPhone, because I really don't like it. I just don't like it. Let's just keep it at that. Let's not redo the entire rant. And he says, "Hi guys." Well, hi. Thank you for your OS News podcast. Well, we're pleased to do it, obviously. They are interesting and informative. I like the program format, and the music is great. Overall, 10/10. Just a little ego feeding there. I've just been listening to episode X. This is not a flame. I don't wish to criticize you. Just to let you know my thoughts about the iPhone. You see, I didn't like the browser, that the phone was too expensive and doesn't do multitasking. It's called iPhone because it's an iPhone, because it's a phone iPod. The browser is incidental. Web pages are designed for larger screens. If you want to use the internet, use a larger device. Apple products are expensive. It's a fact of life. They don't do cheap. Naturally, there will be a huge resistance, price pressure, to Apple taking market share from the big European and Japanese phone manufacturers, especially in Europe and Japan. I have no doubt multitasking will arrive with an update from Apple in the near future. It's easy for Apple to deliver updates through iTunes. Let's just break it off there and then do the second part after that, because it really addresses the actual criticisms that I listed. The browser's incidental, web pages are designed for larger screens. If you want to use the internet, use a larger device. Yeah, well, that's pretty obvious, but the problem that I have is that Apple is marketing the iPhone as having the full web, and that it's a pleasant browsing experience, and it is not.
In the UK, their advert was removed because of that claim. Complaints that the Apple were misleading because it didn't include Flash on the device and therefore didn't include the internet as a whole. And that complaint was upheld by the Advertising Standards Agency in the UK. That is very true. They do present it as having the whole internet, but it's, of course, being a mobile device, it's limited. That's just the long and short of it.
Yeah, and it doesn't just have to do with the Flash issue, but in general, if you say that it has the full web, then you're making a certain promise. You're making a certain promise that the browsing experience is... I got an email. That the browsing experience is the same or at least close to what you would get on a laptop or a desktop. And it's by no means comparable. So using something like the full web, I don't think that's a proper way to describe it. Because if you then actually use the device, well, there are a lot of things that really detract from the web experience, like, you know, slow loading times. The redraw is incredibly slow. You see empty spaces all the time. The zooming in and out isn't nearly as fluent as you'd want it to be, because you'd have to wait for the fonts to properly render and all that stuff. So your point is obviously true. I mean, it is incidental, and the browser, that is, and they are designed for larger screens, web pages, and if you want to use the internet, you should use a larger device. That's all true, but it's not marketed as such. So that's kind of where my criticism comes from. Moving on to the expensive thing, it's a fact of life, they don't do cheap. Well, still, there was more a complaint from you, wasn't it, about the price, Rock, or what?
Yeah, I mean that's it's a problem really more in the UK. It's because the market is there's a lot more competition here. You can a lot of companies are desperate, and you can haggle yourself a very good price. But that isn't open with the iPhone and O2. It's a very strict. You buy what's listed. And you're not getting a lot for your money, so it's not that it's expensive, because I mean any company can is free to put a product out there for any price they want, and if people want it they buy. I mean take the iPhone, when it came out first it was $600, and then just 2 months down the line they lopped $200 off of it. And and the only way they could have done that, if that was $200 worth of pure profit, and people still bought it, and people were still happy with their decision because they were there and had it on day one. So the price thing really is that I don't think it's a very competitive price, but people still buy it because it's they desire it. So it's luxury, luxury.
Yeah, it's the in thing to buy right now. I mean, if you're famous and don't have an iPhone, you're a bit like behind the times, right? So it's really important to have one.
In
So
fact, I said a comment to a user, you probably noticed this, a long time ago, and they were talking about before the iPhone came out, or probably no, it was soon afterwards. And I was saying, and I said about, no, the iPhone is going to be far more popular than all of these Windows mobile phone things, simply because you don't look like an absolute twit getting your phone out and getting your stylus out when you're in front of your friends to try and look up a map or anything. It's far more natural, and it fits better into a social situation than getting out your extremely geeky Windows mobile phone and tapping around forever and everything, than using the touch interface, which is more cool.
well, the let's just not talk about Windows Mobile like ever, because let's just move on, because that operating system is so entirely bad that I could probably fill by myself 20 podcasts about why Windows Mobile currently is a total piece of, Let's just move on to the next point that he made about multitasking. So he says, I have no doubt multitasking will arrive in an update from Apple in the near future. It's easy for Apple to deliver the
That's really
update through iTunes.
important, because other
But
phone manufacturers can't do that. They don't have the update infrastructure in place. They don't have the software infrastructure in place. Nobody updates their phones. I've got a phone right here that's a year old. I've got no freaking clue how to update the firmware on this, and it probably requires Windows anyway, and I wouldn't even want to download and install a piece of Sony software to do it. Not over
No, I
my dead
can.
body, I would.
Yeah, I can kind of understand that. But to this specific question, I don't think the current batch of iPhones, like the that they're putting out now, can actually handle multitasking, because even loading a single application on an iPhone takes like forever compared to other phones. And I think they really skimped on processor power. And especially on ROM, because it only got like 128 megabytes of ROM, which would be enough if it weren't for the fact that the device actually runs macOS 10. And as we all know, macOS 10
Well,
isn't a memory-friendly operating system. So
it
I
can
don't think it.
do multitasking, but they choose not to for the experience sake. I mean, it's a Unix operating system. It's very capable of doing
Yeah.
multithreading, and it already is at the kernel level and the software that Apple's running. But they just don't have the UI on top to let you run more than one program, and that is, as you said, because it's just too slow.
Yeah,
So it's for an experience reason. It's not that the operating system can't. So
no, the
it's
operating
only a
system
matter
obviously can, yeah.
of Apple coming up with the right UI, and if they want to, ultimately.
Yeah, and in addition to come up with better hardware, because like I said, I don't think this iPhone can actually handle running multiple applications at the same time. In for instance, the videos of the Prey show, I don't think it's actually possible. And I mean, they'd really have to optimize a lot of the code. I'm not really sure if iPhone version 3 is going to bring that. I don't know, because we can't look at the code, and a few people have actually used it, but they re there's it would it, I mean, yeah, they can deliver this update through iTunes, but that it would involve a lot of work in making the software smaller and tighter and leaner and faster. Because I don't think the hardware is capable of delivering that. And of course, I don't know what's inside the iPhone. I only base that on my actual user experience of using the iPhone, which I, even though I don't have
I
one, my
think
mother has one, so I use it all the time. It's
it's a 600
slow.
megahertz X-scale ARM processor, I
No,
believe. Or
no,
no,
it's
sorry,
going to be. It's going to be a
to be
600
a
mega.
600 megahertz
That's
scale,
what
yeah. John Gruber.
yeah, that's what he said from the next iPhone, that it's going to have a completely
Yeah.
newer and faster
Isn't it
processor.
300 then at the moment?
At 300 or 400 or something. I
And
don't
it's down
know.
clocked as well, in
Yeah.
order to for battery life. So there
Yeah.
is actually they could if they can improve the software, if they can optimize the software, then they may be able to unlock extra performance simply by switching the cap off
Yeah,
and
but.
running at the full processor speed.
Yes, but processor speed has never really been a problem for the Mac operating system. It's always memory. I mean, my old Power Mac, I mean, it still ran Mac OS X, but the only reason it could run it that fast is if I, by A, putting more ROM in it, and B, by offloading the graphics performance to the graphics calculations to the graphics card by putting in a capable graphics card. So the memory really is the big thing for at least for the Mac operating system, and they can't upgrade the memory. So I don't think it's going to happen on current models. I don't
But
think
we're
it's
getting
possible.
really wildly off topic because really he's just replying to this whole discussion we're having now anyway.
Yeah.
And he's just trying, let me carry on with the email. Because he basically said we were just being unduly harsh on
Yeah.
iPhone. It's one of those things where if you mention the word iPhone, we're just off on a rant. You can do it easily just by saying Adobe or something, and there you go, you've got half hour discussion about how much we hate product, a particular product. So he's just saying he likes the iPhone. He's in disagreement with us, but obviously respects that we all have different opinions. And he says he likes the big buttons because it's good for hands. It's not so fiddly. It's not like
Yeah.
Windows Mobile and using a stupid stylus. So it's easy to dial with. It's the best MP3 player, which I would probably mostly agree with. I would never ever use the MP3 software on my mobile phone because I wouldn't know how to get things on there, and I wouldn't ever install Sonic Stage.
Nope.
He says the application development is excellent, which again that's true to be
True.
honest.
Yeah, definitely.
The window sorry not Windows well mobile software development in general has been just so horrendous for years and years and years of being fragmented, proprietary, crippled, and then Apple have brought along a really good sort of development system, and a lot of people are moving to Macs, and a lot of people are moving to Object C purely on wanting to make iPhone stuff. And the fourth point, he says, it's mechanically simple and robust. There's no moving parts except for the mute switch, and designed for a long life. Well, I haven't held one personally. I haven't used one. I wouldn't buy one. I wouldn't really be able to comment on that.
Well, it really does feel like a very solid device. I mean, like I said, I'm using it a lot. Even though I don't have one, my mother has one, and we live in the same small village, so I get to play with it a lot. And I like playing with it because it is a fun experience. But it's just there are a lot of things wrong with it. But the build quality, actually, I'm not sure if this is like a common problem. But my mother's iPhone, even though my mother's really like very protective over her stuff, and the thing has never actually dropped. But for some reason, the glass is cracked below the home button and the low end of the device. So there's like a 3-4 millimeter like complete crack in the glass from top to bottom. So it's really weird, and we have no idea where it's coming from. So I advise her just to take it back to the store, which I'm not entirely sure if she already done that, if she actually found the time for that. But that was really weird. I'm not saying that it's a general problem, but just some fun fact that I wanted to mention. I like his fifth reason though why he likes the iPhone.
Yes.
That's a pretty good one. Eugenia likes it, so it must be good. That's actually a really good point. That is actually a pretty good point because, in general, Eugenia is always very critical, and some people say she's harsh, but she's usually right in her criticisms. So
She's very thorough and
very thorough. Yes. So it may sound like nitpicking to others, but because of her nitpicking, other stuff actually gets better. That's basically the whole gist of it here. So by saying Eugenia likes it, so it must be good, even though it's probably meant as a joke, he does have a point there. I think that's interesting.
Yeah, I would
There was
much
a
more trust Eugenia to comment on a phone than me. I
yeah,
would,
or
you know.
me, yeah, definitely, definitely.
Yeah, let's get this
Moving
other
on
email
to
out of the way quickly.
yeah, that's one for you because this is about the instant
Okay.
rebate.
Yeah, this is from Kevin McCluskey, and he's asked us. There was no feedback on the comments about the instant rebate comment because we were like completely WTF about what on earth this American instant rebate thing. And he says that it's they put on because in America the sales the VAT the tax is added, whereas we're used to VAT were added to the price of the tax being included on the shelf. So he's saying you put $400 in, you add the taxes on top of that, and then you take off $100. So they pay the extra tax given by having a higher rate and then remove actual $100. So all you're doing is just paying more tax at the end of the day for this sort of instant rebate. So he says, for example, for a $400 device, if it was a $100 rebate, you would have $335 given 8.25% state and 0.5% county tax. Again, it's not as bad as I thought, perhaps, but it doesn't compare to the iPhone being. Well, no, hang on, because the iPhone's $199, but that doesn't include the taxes, does it?
Yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah,
So,
so. Oh, isn't there a real comparison? Then I wouldn't know off the top of my head.
no,
But no, thank
and
you, Phil, for clearing that up for us, Kevin, because we had no idea what on earth all that was about.
yeah, okay, so that's good.
We're good. Let's move on to our first article,
Yeah,
what we're going
that's
to
good.
cover. Try and combine two things together because really there's a lot of big stuff on the homepage at the moment.
Yeah, a lot of popular stuff in any case.
And we just, well, we this has been up and down the web. It's got a lot of views. It's your guide on how to build a Hackintosh that Apple can't sue you for.
Yeah, I love that headline. It really rolls off the tongue really well. It may not exactly be. It was more meant of, that headline was more meant as a joke because of the whole putting an actual Apple on top of the device to circumvent the end user license agreement. But people got a bit hung up on it. But I don't. I, you know, I can understand that. It's the headline. I probably should have taken another headline. But still, I thought it was funny, so I kept it
I like
there.
it.
But yeah, what's there to say? I mean, it's. Actually, I decided to buy the dual core Atom machine that's now running macOS 10, even during this podcast, actually. I'm recording this podcast
On
on my
your Mac in
hack.
inverted commas.
Yeah. No, but it actually, that's pretty fun because it isn't a Hackintosh. It didn't hack any code, any Apple code. So I really don't like calling it a Hackintosh. It's a
Yeah,
Mac,
no,
but
this
it's
is what
just not
this
an Apple
article is
one.
so interesting is because it isn't the usual, because it's not like you've built the first Hackintosh. That's not what it's about. It's about that
No.
you're demonstrating how simple it is to using this specific piece of software. It's called Boot 132, and that simplifies the process so that you don't have to do any modifying of the Leopard CD. You just put in the Leopard CD and install OS X, as it was on a Mac for real.
Yeah, but it does come of course obviously with a few strings attached, so but it is interesting because it just uses the open source base of macOS 10, so the Darwin kernel. It uses a modified Darwin kernel using strictly open source, and it kind of bootstraps that kernel to the actual CD, the actual retail Leopard CD. So the editing is not done on the Apple CD, but on the open source parts of it that are freely available on the web, and you can modify that at your own leisure. So we're not breaking, we're not hacking Apple code, and we're not doing anything that we shouldn't do, basically. And then you bootstrap the actual the normal CD, and then you install it, and then you boot into the installed operating system once using the boot CD, and then from within macOS 10 you install a bootloader, and that's usually called Chameleon. They have a newer version as well. I use the old version because that's what everyone else was using. There is a newer version, but I'm not entirely sure if it works. And then you get the new version has a graphical bootloader, and you can select icons for Windows and Mac and Linux and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, but it does have several advantages, like the DMCA thing. So technically, you're not circumventing protection measures, because circumventing protection measures means that you're hacking at the protection measures to make them go away. Like for instance, with
Now, this
when
is
you're installing a
interoperating
crack,
with the circumvention measures.
I'm just using a different kernel. I'm using a different kernel. That's not wrong. I mean, Apple actually has entire guides on how you can compile your own kernel for macOS 10 on its on the open source section of their website. So it's perfectly normal. It's just not, probably they didn't intend it to be used this way, but that doesn't mean it's actually not allowed. So that's pretty good. And the other advantage is because you're using a completely bog standard macOS 10 CD, is that updates don't break your Mac. So when let's just keep on calling it a Hackintosh. The updates don't break your Hackintosh, which is pretty good. The only real bump in the road is that Apple is pretty rigorous in maintaining the extensions folder. So the extensions folder is where you keep your drivers, the text files. And to in order to support this specific machine that I'm running it on now, you have to install a driver package that the community has created. Technically, I'm not really the only driver that it installs, I believe, is a driver for the graphics chip, because everything else is, if I researched everything correctly, everything else is supported by macOS 10 by default. But I'm not entirely sure about that. So it only installs the video driver. And then as soon as you update, in my case, from 10.5.6 to 10.5.7, you would go back to the default graphics driver, so you'd have a low resolution and a slow performance and everything. And then after every like point update, so not normal updates, so not security updates, those are fine, no problem. But every time you switch from 10.5.x to 10.5.x plus one, then you have to reinstall the driver package. So you could actually solve that. We'll get a little bit technical here, but the EFI standard, so the new BIOS replacement thing, actually specifies a small partition at the start of your disk, about 200 megabytes, which you can use for all sorts of things pertaining to EFI. But Apple isn't actually using that partition, so it's just sitting there because it should be there according to the specification, but it's empty. Basically, you can make that partition writable and readable, and then mount it, and then you can store your drivers and any additional kernels on that partition, but basically like a boot partition on what you see sometimes on Linux, right? So you can have a special boot partition. That's basically this. You can store your drivers in there and then set up a script that after every update it would automatically like reinstall your drivers. But for me that was just too much work. I mean, I just have the driver package. It's a simple
Click.
.pkg file, double click, restart, and done. So that's no problem for me. And I'm not gonna go through all that trouble. But so technically, it is possible to have a completely seamless experience, but it would require a little bit more work that I personally didn't want to get into. Because at the start, when I started writing this guide, I actually thought that this was just going to be a temporary thing for me, just to be able to write the article. But I'm actually so surprised and so happy with the performance and how everything works and how easy everything is that I'm kind of like, I'm keeping it this way. Even though the original intention of the machine was to replace my media center because it's so small and quiet and it fits neatly in my collection of other audio equipment. But I'm actually not going to do that, I think. I think it will depend on how the next update will work. If the next update would inadvertently
Slightly
still break the
compromises the
device,
system.
yeah, then I'd still, install Windows 7 and put it back on my media center thing. But for now, it works pretty good. So I'm pretty happy with it.
Well, this is, I mean, this has a lot of knock-on effects by having this. I think really, I mean, it makes it easy, obviously, which is a good thing for anybody who's interested in doing this legally. Of course, we should state some countries this is still questionable, others it's not. It's, there's no problem doing this. But where I think this is going really is that actually the people who are looking to make money out of it are probably looking at this with greedy eyes more than unfortunately how much it helps individual people do it to individual computers for personal use. Because we had the what was it before this has come along, we've had a lot of other ways of doing this, but they've all involved a lot of hacking. And you
Yeah.
had that well, no, you had the other device, that one, the little USB thing that you plug in, and
Yeah.
that did a similar sort of thing as well, but that avoided the circumvention features. But by making this easy, you've got more Mac clones springing up. In fact, loads, surprisingly loads. We've seen one in Russia, we've seen one in the UK, and now we've got news as well. Have you seen it of an actual retail store setting up in
Yeah.
Los Angeles?
I've got a few things to say about that one because we already got a submission about that last week. Excuse me. But I didn't want to report on it because it was just an announcement from the company that they were going to open a store and a website tomorrow. So Monday, 1st of June. And I don't want to report on this until I know for sure that that shop is open and that the website is running. And
You can
so the
walk in there
story
and see
isn't,
it.
yeah, and that it's not a hoax or a scam. So we have our item waiting in the submission queue, and we'll see tomorrow if it's actually real or not, and then we'll report on it tomorrow. Just to,
Yeah. If
yeah.
it's real, it's surprising they could even open, they would manage to open the doors without Apple having sued them beforehand or got a subpoena or something like that. It's extremely ballsy. Because we, in fact, yeah, that's what we wanted to do, is we wanted to segue on to mentioning Psystar
Yeah,
in
that's an
this whole
interesting.
issue.
Yeah, of course, we all know a little recap that PsyStar was actually the first, I believe, at least the first that we know of, that started selling, well, Hackintoshes, like non-Apple labeled Macintosh machines, with Mac OS X pre-installed.
As an option.
Yeah, as an option, yes, exactly. And then they went on for a couple of months, and then obviously Apple sued them, and there was a lot of suing going back and forth, and weird stuff going back and forth. And Apple is claiming there's like all sorts of secret people that are investing in PsyStar, and they're all out to kill the evil empire, or Apple, so to speak. And that lawsuit is still going on. And then at the beginning, there were a couple of small minor victories for PsyStar, and then later on, there were a couple of minor victories for Apple. But the actual lawsuit is still going on. Nobody has won. Nobody has lost.
However, PsyStar have run out of money now.
Yeah, they've run out of money now. So there are a couple of reasons why that could be. One, they're actually really out of money. Or two, these super secret investors that Apple is hinting at backed out of this whole thing. Both are incredibly stupid, actually, because if you run out of money too soon, that means you weren't paying attention very well. And if your investors pulled out, then you didn't take really good care of your investors, and you didn't prepare them very well. So, but it's important to note, though, that Chapter 11 bankruptcy isn't actually the end of a company. It's just some sort of
It's protection.
protection.
It's
Yeah, I'm not entirely
no
sure how
more
it works, but
litigation can happen, basically.
yeah.
So the lawsuit that they're currently locked into is, is it. That's the one that's got to be completed. And what they can do is, if they win that, then they can claim back their expenses from Apple, and they can continue operating. If they lose that, that's the end of them. They cease to exist. There's no way they can recover from that.
Yeah. And I do have to say, though, that I'm for some weird reason, I am rooting actually for PsyStar, not necessarily because I hate Apple or more of that nonsense that some people say. It's just that I don't believe that a company should be able to tell me what I do with legally purchased software, and that the fact that it just says install on an Apple labeled computer. I made the joke of putting an actual Apple on my machine. I actually didn't do that. It was a joke of putting an Apple on machine. Does it make it Apple labeled? What if I take my Power Mac, which I have here now, take all the internals out, put the new motherboard that I bought and that's running now, the Mac OS X, and I put that back in the Power Mac case. Does that make it an Apple labeled computer? What's the difference? What does Apple labeled even mean? And I want the lawsuit to tell, at least, well, it will only go for Americans, obviously, but where the rest of the world generally follows what happens in America. So, I want that lawsuit and the judge to tell me. Not as an American, but I wanted to tell the American audience, what does Apple labeled mean? That's the first thing that I want to tell me. Does Apple labeled mean produced by Apple? Because, and if it does, well, what about the issue that I just posed? What if I rip out the internals in my Power Mac, put in new internals, and install Mac OS X on that? Is it still an Apple labeled computer or not? Like, where's the line? What's the difference? And the second question that I want answered is, can a company actually impose post-sale restrictions, specifically a software company? Those are the two things that I want to know. And I just hope that that and I th and I, my personal belief is that a company shouldn't be able to tell you what you can do with software. And that's why I'm rooting for PsyStar, not because I think PsyStar is like some big hero or anything. I just see that as a convenient way to get some answers on this issue, because it's not just about Apple. End user license agreements are abused across the board, also by Windows, by Microsoft, for instance, telling you that you're not allowed to publish benchmarking information and more of that nonsense. I just want somebody to take a stand against that nonsense. And if it has to be PsyStar, then it has to be PsyStar. I don't care who does it, but
Yeah, PsyStar aren't exactly the best choice, but it's got the ball rolling. I mean, I don't like PsyStar at all, not because they're competing with Apple or they are trying to fight the man or something. They're just a rubbish company. The products are, are extremely shoddy, ugly looking. Early on, the fans, it sounded like you had a tornado jet trying to take off on your desk. It's just a shoddy company, poor support. It's a, what do they call, fly-by-night company or something like that. We'll talk about that when that article goes up, if this whole new shop thing comes out, because obviously we don't know if that's true or not yet, so let's ignore that.
Yeah.
But I'd have something to say about that. Yeah, this the whole issue does need to be answered, but I'm feeling like that in the long run, really, it's the users that are going to lose out of this. The companies are going to win, and it's the individual people who are going to lose out because Apple are going to tighten up their anti-piracy routines in Mac OS X. They're going to clamp down on piracy. We might get activation or license keys for OS X Leopard, Snow Leopard when it comes out.
Yeah, but you know, this isn't a piracy issue. This is an issue about what I do. I have legally
Yeah, but
purchased
how are
copies
Apple
of.
going to react to it? I mean, it being right or wrong is regardless of how Apple going to react to it. Because it's being thrown up there, we're all going to get negative impact. That's what I think.
Yeah, well, that's just, you know, yeah, well, that might be true, but still, I just hope that the judge is sane. Which is, of course, a big question of anyone who's involved in the law, but I just want them to be reasonable and see that it's kind of weird for a software company to tell you what to do with their software other than, you know. The thing is, though, there are so many questions that are related to this. I mean, is clicking OK the same as signing, as actually signing a dotted line? Is that the same thing? Is it OK for this contract, air quotes, to be presented after the purchase? Is it okay for this contract to be digital only? Is it okay that you maybe not be able to review this? Is it okay that Apple doesn't actually get your signature? Is it okay that you don't get a printout? There are so many questions related to this issue that have never been properly tested. Well, they have been tested a few times actually, but with a case about Adobe and someone actually reselling parts of a software package or something. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah,
Yeah,
in
but
the
that.
UK that's legal. You
Yeah.
can do resell software. In America, it's not certain.
Yeah, but that case, people often bring it up as proof that Apple is going to lose. But that case was different because the guy who was selling the software didn't actually click I agree. He didn't actually see or agree or even install the software. So that's a different case. I have actually installed Mac OS X. I clicked I agree to the to the to the. In addition, including the clause that says that I'm not supposed to install it on a machine without an Apple label, which I solved by putting an Apple on it. So, you know, there are so many questions here that I would really love to see answered. So, you know, I hope that's working out, but it's going to take a while. And obviously, but in the end, at the end of the day, Apple is obviously going to win because they have more money, and they can let
Yeah,
the and they
this
can have
is
this drag on
what
forever.
I'm
And that's
worried about is
yeah, and
that we're going
so.
to get more backlash or just as I say, negative impact. It's going to be, there's nothing's good going to come out of this. It may, after all, if the judge sides correctly. But again, as we were discussing at some point earlier, that even if Apple lose, it doesn't mean they have to make things easy to install OS X on a Hackintosh
No.
because they can just keep going up making their product to work with their hardware. They don't have to suddenly help everybody else pirate. So I'm just concerned that this is going to we're all going to lose out in the end because we've got a really good Mac ecosystem at the moment where software developers are really open and reasonable and we don't have activation and we don't have license keys on a lot of things. There's lots of trust. And if we get all this legal stuff, then we're just going to get trust going out of the window. Oh, I don't know, really. There's a way to solve it all, which is just use free software, switch to Linux. Don't
Obviously.
really. I suppose that's a good thing as well. All this litigation, etc., just raises the whole issue that you're buying into something that has got all this baggage attached, and that I don't know. Maybe it will encourage more people to switch to free and open source software where you don't have
Yeah,
that stuff.
which is always a good thing because the more people use it, the more people complain and the better it'll get, right? So, you know, yeah.
Our next item, we're going to look at it's another Ask OS news item. We've had a couple this week, which is obviously thanks to the readers for sending these questions in, because that's where we're getting them out ultimately, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good idea by David actually. He didn't like he just I just opened up West News and suddenly saw Ask West News. It was pretty good idea. So we get some good article ideas there, and there are a lot of questions being sent in. So it's pretty good.
And we've got a reader who has asked us, why do we hold on to the FHS file system hierarchy standard, which is the default Linux layout of folders, the file system? Oh, well, we know what we're talking about.
Yeah, not just Linux, though. It's a general Unix standard,
oh, sorry,
actually.
Correction, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to. You're going to find out as we go along that I'm very, very ignorant when it comes to this. I started out in computers on a Commodore 64. I moved to GEOS. You know, both of which didn't have folders at all, and then moved on to Windows 3.1 and Windows thereon, and didn't move full time to a different platform until I switched to Mac, I think. Yeah, so the Unix and Linux, no idea. And in fact, that's probably some of my complaint about the FHS. When I use Ubuntu, as I've said before in the podcast, I try out every new Ubuntu that comes out. I always do to see what improvements are and if I can adopt it at the end of the day. And because repositories are fortunately not a 100% complete solution, sometimes I have to download software off of the web like I'm used to doing on every other operating system. And I get a package file, and you can't, even though it's a package file which is designed for the packaging system, you can't double click on it to install. Oh no, if you double click on it, it will try to open it in a text editor. Fantastic.
It does?
You have
not
to
anymore.
Actually drop to a command line. Well, this is the last time I did this, which is probably one or two versions back on Ubuntu, but you have to drop to command line. You've got to type in a specific command line, point to your package file to then actually get it to install, which is an absolute nightmare. I shouldn't have to do something like that. And then I wish I could remember what piece of software it was, but it might have been a driver. And it asked me where to install it, and I'm like, I haven't got a freaking clue. What's the program files folder for Linux? I literally can't. Oh, in fact, there's another example that is more recent. I tried to create a shortcut to Firefox on my desktop, and you right click and you go, create a new launcher, and it says, okay, please select the program. Ah. Where the crap is it?
It didn't.
I don't know.
But there's an easier way to do that. You like open the menu and just drag the Firefox icon.
That wasn't working for some reason because that is obviously my first port of call. But
always
just,
worked for
just
me.
Didn't work.
Oh, that's weird. But even your other story sounds weird because Ubuntu has included like the GDebian installer for Debian packages for. I'd say like 2 years or something.
Well, this is the thing is I'm not enough experience about Linux. I mean, I downloaded the file and the instructions was given along with it to type this command line. And the actual file itself was sort of like a PKG file or something like that.
I already think if you've got a driver and sometimes drivers don't come in packages, you indeed have to use a script to install the actual package.
Hmm.
So that's definitely possible, like a .sh script or something.
Probably wasn't the best package software in the world.
No. You know? So you probably didn't know. I thought you downloaded a Debian package, like a .deb package, and then it wouldn't install with double-clicking. But, you know, the most Linux distributions have that functionality for like 2 years now. So you probably downloaded like a script or something, and you have to. And scripts obviously aren't executable by default, which is a security measure and a good thing. So you have to, go into the...
You have to do it on the command line, or you've got to drop...
Yeah,
you've got to close down X and do it on a command line, which is just, you know, it's asking a bit more.
You have to close down X as well? Oh, then it was probably like a video driver, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, then it was a video driver. Well, yeah, that's it. Yeah, I mean, but couldn't you just install the video driver using the package manager?
No, this was before then. I can't remember it all, unfortunately. But it's something that I had to do, and I did get it working in the end. It was the instructions that was provided on the website. They said, do this, and I carefully followed it. I mean, I don't know anything about Linux, but I can follow instructions if someone says, you know, do some command line wizardry. That's,
yeah.
That's no problem.
Yeah,
But it's just one experience of not understanding where to do things on the file system. As I was saying, creating a launcher. Normally in Windows, I would do create new shortcut, browse to where you want to go, program files, Firefox. Thank you. But then I'm given this whole list of directories. I've got opt, etc., private. Etc. I'm like, where do programs go?
Yeah, well, that's. I mean, I'm not exactly the ambassador for the for the FHS or for any of the current file system standards, for that matter. You're right. I mean, it is kind of a mess in that it's not logical. And I think that file systems can be made a lot more logical than the FHS, more logical than what Windows is doing, and definitely more logical than what the Mac is doing, because the Mac is just a hodgepodge of two different
Really?
paradigms. It's you got like a Unix file system that you don't see in the graphical user interface,
Yeah,
and
I
then you
like
have.
that.
No, it's not good. It's just a stupid layer. It's basically an admittance that the Unix way of doing things sucks, because if it wouldn't suck, you wouldn't need an extra layer to hide it. I don't think that if a system tries to hide something, it generally means there's a design error somewhere.
It's probably because they can't. There's too much weight against them to change the
Yeah,
file
obviously,
system.
that's true. I mean,
So they've just had to accept it
yeah.
and mask it, as it were. But
Yeah.
you know, for what Mac OS X does, it is good. Ignoring the Unix side, if we talk about user space, then the Mac OS X file system is pretty good because it's got divisions for system and user at both the extension level and at personal file level and at the application level. You can even install applications into your user folders so that you've got personalized applications that are only there when you log in, available to yourself. Everything's quite cleanly divided and works quite well. This is also the articles talking about Gobo Linux, which has adopted such a system themselves, trying to make this root set of files folders a lot more meaningful.
Yeah, but the problem is that it's just hiding something. The actual Unixy file what do you call it? The Unixy directory structure is still there. And people say that well, who cares if it's hidden? Users should not see it. Well, that's the problem. Users are going to see it, and I don't believe that a system should remain complicated just because you generally don't see it. If a system can be made simpler without losing
It should.
functionality, it should, by definition,
Yeah, and
because
if
reducing.
renaming a folder does that, then how freaking hard can that be?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I believe that the computers can be made easier on every level. Right now, a computer, it used to be the way that a computer was hard to use from top to bottom, right? So the actual nitty gritty stuff, the kernel, all that stuff was hard to use, and then all the layers on top were hard to use. And there wasn't like a graphical user interface that people could use, and it wasn't easy to use all around. But in the past like 20, 30 years, we made the very top, we made that easy to use, the graphical user interface. But everything underneath is still a complete and total mess. And I think a lot of that is very hard to change. But I think the file system is actually one of those things that we can change. Because what was I going to say? I was going to say something brilliant. See, this happens every time. I lose my train of thought for no apparent reason. Basically, I just don't think that hiding stuff is that was what I said. Hiding stuff isn't the answer. If you should make it better, hiding isn't a good idea. And the problem with the FHS is also that even though it's called the file system hierarchy standard, it's not actually a standard. It would be better if it actually was a standard and if everybody would actually follow it. But even though the standard itself allows for exceptions, which is never good, for a lot of exceptions actually, distributors have a lot of freedom to just do whatever the hell they want with it, then the various BSDs use a completely different, well, not completely different, but a very different way of implementing the standard than Linux distributions do. And then even Linux distributions among themselves have a lot of differences. So you may be versed in one distribution and know where everything is, where config files are, where files are stored, and all that sort of stuff. And then you move to another distribution, and then everything is in a different place. How on what planet is that actually a good idea? Because
that's just where you get one developer who thinks that they know better, and maybe they do, but the problem is with Linux is you've got so much diversity, you've got so many different repos everywhere, you can't get any unification unless you've got a standards group who can then dictate what that is, and then people don't follow as well. It's herding cats at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's hurting also like the development and everything, because you have to repackage everything for, you know. But the changing the file system itself, so the FHS itself, that's not actually the real answer to the problem. I think the problem is that there are a lot of things that should be changed about the way we manage files and the way we manage, especially the way we manage programs. And I think various operating systems have all sorts of good ideas on this. So the good idea on the Linux side of things is the like centralized management, that you can use one application to manage like one program to manage all your applications, that you can have a centralized point for updating, which is really, really good. So that's a good idea on the Linux side of things. Then you have the Mac, which has a good idea when it comes to the bundles. I don't think the Mac OS X implementation is thorough enough, but at least it's a start, right? It's good. And then what's the good thing about Windows? Help me here.
It's easy.
Technically, it's easy. Let's just keep it at that. And what's also pretty good is that there's a separation between where programs go. They're in program files. I mean, the logic is just astounding there. So that's really good. But we have to combine all that. And you know, I wrote an article ages ago about that and how we could potentially do that.
Yeah. And it's funny how we can do such incredible things with computers and solve such amazing problems, you know, with the strides that Linux have done, but we can't just rename some folders. Nope, too hard. No, can't do that. Too much arguments. You know, yeah. It's bike shedding.
No, it's not just bike shedding. I think it's more a form of, I call it geek hazing. I'm not entirely sure if hazing is the proper word, but it's kind of like all the people that are Linux and Unix geeks now had to climb up that hill of difficulty, right? And they're on top, and they're seeing a whole bunch of people at the bottom of the hill, at the foot of the hill. They also want to get up there. And the people on top of the hill actually have the option, the possibility to really change it, to make it easier to get up the hill. It's like maybe to create stairs, right? So that it's easier to get up to get up the top of the hill. But no, we had to go through all that. So now you have to go through the same thing. I think that's the only logical reason that I can think of why we're not trying to change more core aspects of operating system. And that's not just the Unix side, but it's also the Mac side and also the Windows side. File systems can be made easier and more logical, and programs can be made easier to manage and easier to install everything. But we're not doing it.
It's a belief of mine that I think we are now in 2009 beyond the need to actually see hard disks. We shouldn't be showing people hard disks as a core part of the file system, because I think that's a metaphor that's no longer needed. It should be phased out. We shouldn't be talking about the hardware. We should be talking about a file system as a mounted file of a space, because that it's no longer physical hard disks anymore. It can be spread across RAID. It can be different kinds of equipment. It could be network, etc. Yeah. And so the fact that Mac OS X puts your hard disk as your entry point. In fact, actually, tell a lie, Tiger did it, but I think on Leopard by default they switch off the hard disks from the desktop, and you can only get to it by going directly to Finder.
But no, it's still here. It's still here.
Oh, it's still here. Yeah. Okay. Well, hopefully they do switch it off. But and Windows as well. You've got My Computer. It's hard disk centric. The navigation is hard disk centric. Well, it shouldn't be. It should be file system centric, because we've still got too many users who save everything on the C drive, on root of C.
Well, that's pretty cool that you're telling me this, because. I'm sorry that I have to bring it up again, but BOS already did what you said.
Oh, yeah, exactly. There's always some other operating system that solved this. Yeah, exactly.
And BOS already did it.
Adopt it.
Yeah, they didn't focus on...
That's good to know.
The main drive, like the drive you were running BOS from, just listed entry points as like home directory and that sort of things. And then you could drill further down, but it didn't do that by default.
I personally think that the root of C should not be accessible unless you know what you're doing. Not hidden like Microsoft Windows does, like big warning splash screen, you can't open this.
It's
as hidden as the Unix directories are on Mac OS X. Shouldn't be visible. Shouldn't be able to access the root of C drive.
You should only be able
to access the folders from there downwards, because we shouldn't be looking at this from a hardware-centric point of view, because it's just an confusing metaphor. People have the icon for a hard disk. People don't know what hard disks look like. They only know what a computer looks like. They haven't got a clue what goes on inside. It's a bad metaphor.
Yeah, well... Well, if I were to just reiterate that's basically what you would want out of a new and better system. But I'm just gonna read out the list that I made in the article, because it basically describes everything that I want out of a new better file system layout. So a file system layout that would actually work for me would be that it's human readable. That's definitely something that's really important for me. It should be.
So we've got Windows and Mac OS X do that.
Well. Technically not good enough.
Okay,
definitely not good enough. It's a start though, but it's not good enough. Definitely not good enough. And it should be logical. That's of course a really a difficult term. Because what is logical for one person is not logical for the other. But I think we could come up with something that's logical enough for most people. Three is that it has to be strict. It shouldn't allow for differing interpretations. There's one location for one thing, and that's it. It shouldn't be possible to deviate from the standard, so to speak, which is
Yeah, I
what the
mean Linux
FHS
is a
allows.
problem where you've got user opt and you've got user bin local and things like that, like where does it go and S bin and so forth. So it's super confusing now. It's got to be strict. It's got one place for everything
And
and
then,
everything in its place.
the fourth point actually is a derivative from the first point. So the first point is human readable, and the fourth point is that it should be translatable into other languages.
Well, Mac OS X does already do this. You can have localized folder names. You can localize file and folder names so that they display in translated
Yeah, it
accordingly.
actually do. If you install Mac OS X in Dutch, it actually does. But again, in Mac OS X, it's just a thin layer. It's not implemented
It's
well
buggy.
enough. Yeah, it's a layer, and I don't like layers. Four, five, that it shouldn't be legacy encumbered.
Oh,
So
definitely.
from startup, and then we reach the sixth one, which is not hidden by abstraction layers. I
Yeah,
don't.
Windows is terrible for this. In fact, probably Windows is the biggest offender, in that it has shell spaces and you've got the control panel and you've got a million different windows in Windows Vista and upwards that are all these customized shell spaces that represent virtual things. It's confusing.
Yeah, so that's for me. If something like that could be implemented in any operating system, I'd be really, really happy. But this is just a small part. I mean, I think part of the whole thing is how you manage programs. I think it's really important that you can't change a file system layout without also changing the way programs are managed. Because on Linux, the FHS, I should put it the other way around. On Linux, the package managers are inherently tied to the FHS. So files get put in locations dictated by the file system hierarchy standard. And on Windows, it's kind of weird that sometimes some programs will put stuff in the Windows directory for no apparent reason. So it's not really well isolated there either. And you can actually access the directories put in program files. And I don't think that's necessary. It should just be bundles. And then Mac OS X does implement bundles, but it's kind of like they knew they had a good idea on their hands. Well, we have a good idea, but let's not implement it fully. So like halfway, they felt like,
Well,
oh,
their
well,
next
the hell
step,
with it.
which.
That's just really annoying. So none of them have really good ideas. But I think the important thing to say is that the file system layout is inherently tied to the way programs are managed.
Yeah,
I think that's really
basically, what we're
important.
waiting for is people to the current main operating systems to get on and implement Next Step and BIOS and what we've already had. If they can just finally catch up, please.
Yeah, that's definitely it. But there's a grander thing, at least for me. There's a grander thing, on top of this. The file system is just part of that. I mean, like I said, we made like the very top. We made that relatively easy to use. But I think that if you drill down as far as you can and make as many layers as possible, like easier and more logical and less confusing, that automatically the entire system will become easier to use. Even if people don't actually have to see the file system, by making the file system simpler and more logical and human
Completely agree.
readable, it will have a halo effect on everything else. I mean, it's inevitable. And people
Yeah, it's
compared pe
thinking.
yeah people compared the whole thing to cars, and they said in the comments, and they've said it often in other articles that I wrote about this, well, people don't look under their bonnets either. Should we make engines easier? I said, well, that's not really a good analogy, because I'm not asking people to understand how a processor works. Because that's the hardware. I'm not asking people how to, how a processor works. I'm just telling that if you make the software are not like simple individualized parts. They are tied together. And if you have one complicated thing, it will make other things also complicated. But if you make one thing simpler, it will have an effect on making other things simpler as well. So it's they should just do it, damn it. Yeah.
Right, we are a lot of time has passed by, gosh.
Yeah.
So let's move on.
Yeah.
Mono, comma, moonlight, paint encumbered or not?
Yeah, that was a really interesting one, because Lemmer2 submitted that item. Lemmer2 is a reader, actually. He submitted that item like at the beginning of the week somewhere. I'm not
Yeah,
inter
it's been sitting around for a while.
yeah, and it's been in there because I obviously looked at it like I look at every submission. And I just didn't really know what to do with it, because I'm not really interested in Mono. I don't really care about it. And I don't really care about any patents Microsoft could have because they're not going to ring on my door anyway. I just don't care. And I never really looked into all this, but I figured it was still pretty important. So I just kept putting it off, especially because I have a lot of university work going on right now. And this article required a bit more, like research on my end, at least. Maybe stuff that other people already know, but it took quite a while to actually write this stuff. The basic problem, and it's yeah, I should just read out that paragraph because it perfectly explains the problem here. The way I understand it now is that the common language infrastructure and the C# programming language are ECMA standards, and those may or may not be patent encumbered, and this is unclear. If they are patent encumbered, then they must be made available under reasonable and non-discriminatory terms. Mono is an open source implementation of this common language infrastructure, and also containing a C# compiler. On top of that, Mono implements several technologies around .NET, which are not ECMA standards, and these technologies are certainly covered by patents. So the basic problem here is, are the ECMA standards, so the CLI and the C# programming language, are they covered by patents or not? And if they are, which isn't clear, then there must be Microsoft must make available a reasonable and non-discriminatory license so that everyone can use these standards without any problems. So, and knowing that, Itaewire, another website where we got this article from, they decided to find out where to get that license and if that license actually exists, and by proxy also then if those parts are actually covered by patents, which still isn't sure. It first contacted, or at least took the advice from Miguel de Casa, like the big Mono guy. And Miguel de Casa said, well, you should go to ECMA, which obviously is wrong, because even the ECMA website itself states that the one providing the reasonable license are the ones who own the patents, so the companies, in this case, Microsoft, and not ECMA itself. So ECMA pointed Itaewire back to Microsoft. So Itaewire sent an email to the appropriate person at Microsoft about a month ago, and they still haven't got an answer. And basically, that can mean two things. First, that there are no patents covering CLI and C#, and as such, there's no license to be given. The other thing that could be here is that yes, there are patents covering the CLI and C#, but Microsoft doesn't have such a license ready to be given out. And I think that the second option is probably the most likely one, because if there are no patents, how hard would it be to send an email back and tell the Itaewire author, hey, there are no patents here? So, you guys should probably read the article because it is a bit complicated to explain just in words. You should, if you haven't read this article yet and you have no idea what we're talking about, you should probably read our item because it explains things a bit more clearer than I just did. I just want to make note of that.
Microsoft are loving this
I think so, yes.
because Linux is making a big mistake here. Well, let's not say Linux. Miguel de Castro is making a big mistake here because technology, regardless of any of open source, proprietary, whatever, you should never ever follow someone else's tail and be dependent upon their tail going where you want it to go. At the moment here, Mono is dependent upon whatever Microsoft decide what not .NET is. For compatibility's sake, in the fact that Windows developers can write code that will then run on Windows, the Mono project is forced to follow whatever Microsoft say. When Microsoft jump, the Mono project has to jump, and they're already behind as it is. Microsoft are on .NET 3.5, and Mono is a long way off of that.
Yeah, they're
You've
not.
got Linux software that completely and utterly depends upon the existence of Microsoft and depends upon Microsoft to make the decisions, which is completely against what open source is about.
Yeah, well, the good thing, luckily, is that I personally don't have any problems with Mono, like I said, because I don't care. But
Don't, yep.
that's just me, I'm an individual user. But I do get the problems that other people have. Basically, what you just explained—that's completely reasonable. So it is that simply isn't a very good idea. Luckily, though, because we're talking open source here, basically every Mono application has a non-Mono replacement by now. Even the only thing that I could recall that which version isn't yet completely out of to the Mono version will probably be Tomboy, the linking note-taking app that really can't be explained in words. There is work on a version that doesn't depend on Mono, but I'm not entirely sure how far along that one is yet. But basically, everything else written in Mono has an equivalent, because generally, I mean, Mono doesn't give you features that other programming environments do not give you. So basically, the applications that roll out of Mono are like photo management applications, music players, you know, that sort of thing. So there's nothing in there that makes it really unique, or there's not.
No, it's written for convenience sake, isn't
Yeah,
it? Because it's a
actually,
toolkit
yeah.
at the end of the day.
Yeah, so it's not hard to implement a Mono application in non-Mono, basically, to put it like that. So some applications are dependent on Mono, but the Linux desktop is definitely not dependent on Mono as a whole, basically. So it's not that much of a it shouldn't be that much of a problem. But I do agree with you that Miguel is kind of making a problem. I didn't see that before, because, like I said, I had no idea about the whole patent issue, and then I always assumed that there were specific parts related to making .NET work on Windows, like Windows.forms, those sorts of things, that those were covered by patents, but that the stuff submitted to ECMA was not covered by patents. But I had to, that's why I had to research this, because as it turns out, that isn't clear at all. And now that I know that, I agree with you that Miguel is, I don't really know what he's doing here, or why he is doing this, because he has meant so much to the open source world, like with, you know, with Symian and all the stuff that they did there. So I just find it kind of weird. I mean, maybe he's. I'm sure, like, his Mono implementation, that is really good, and that it's really good
Yeah,
technology,
I
and that
agree
it's
with you
working
that
really
it's a
hard,
bit
and that it works.
odd.
Yeah.
Now, I was just saying that you, I agree with you, it's very odd what McGuire's doing. He must know something we don't, perhaps, you know?
Yeah.
Perhaps he does. Perhaps he knows the state about this because perhaps he's got closer ties with Microsoft because he's the head guy doing this whole Mono project in the first place. Perhaps he does know something we don't know and really should come out with it. I would like to read a comment by one of the OS News readers. There's a lot of comments on this article, but
Obviously.
this one in particular I notice it's by Alexandra AM.
Let me see. Where is it? It's beginning, the end.
Just do a search on your page for Alexandre.
Yeah, but
Alexandre.
I have 20 comments per page, so I have to switch to like the full view first.
Oh,
Okay, there we
you'll
go.
never find it, sorry.
Command F, and what was Alexander? Oh, wait.
But he's basically saying he works with .NET. He
Short
does it
side.
as programming for a life, for a job anyway.
Yeah.
But he says there isn't a guarantee that it will never be put under a license that forces developers to pay. There isn't this absolute certainty and openness. Mike is saying that, well, Microsoft could say, okay, you have to pay a penny for every single implementation that's out there, which they're perfectly right to say so if they want implementation. Remember that ECMA is about standards, not about a bit, you know. It's still commercial. You know, there's still prices involved with standards. And he says he can't imagine the knock-on effect that would have for the GNOME desktop if it was if we did get to the point where it was deeply entrenched with Mono software, and all of a sudden you had to then go on a rewrite mission because Microsoft had just thrown a spanner in the works. So yeah, it was basically saying about my concerns that I think this is a really bad move that in that you're relying on something you're completely uncertain on, and you're relying on upon another company who is your enemy at the end of the day to tell you where to go.
Yeah, it's. I mean, after this little research, I'm starting to see where all the Mono complaints are coming from. I really don't think that it is very wise for open source programmers to
Why?
program in Mono right now. I think you should just. I
There's
mean,
better
yeah,
things, you
there's.
know. Why using the .NET? Why re-implement this Microsoft technology on Linux on an operating system that's completely thought out a whole different way? .NET is a really, I mean, you can run it cross-platform, obviously, because it's got the CLI or whatever it's called, the MSLR intermediate language thing. But it's a Windows designed language. It's thought of in a Windows way. And why even bother? You know, you've got better things. You know, come
Yeah,
on, you got.
I don't understand it either. I just hope that even though, you know, a Western isn't that important enough to actually push this issue, but I hope that other sites pick it up, other sites with more, you know, with more gravity, and then that this issue gets settled. I mean, This really isn't something that you would want entrenched in a on your Linux distribution. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're an individual user. I mean, it may matter to you like morally, but as a user, you don't have anything to fear of using Mono. Let's just reiterate that. You have nothing to fear. Don't worry. But if you're a distributor, that's kind of a different issue because especially if you're like a really big distribution. You know, like Red Hat
Yeah,
or
you're a
whatever.
potential target.
You're a
So
potential.
Microsoft don't have to say, they don't have to blanket it. They can just go to Novell and say, right, pay up. And legally, they've got a case.
Definitely, yeah. So I'm not. I don't think it's really clever to go there. But another part of this story that I want to move on to, if it's okay with you, is Moonlight and Silverlight. As we all know, Silverlight is basically Microsoft's
Flash killer.
Flash killer and competitor. I do have to say though that Silverlight seems lighter on resources than Flash. I used it a couple of times during the on a couple of Microsoft websites as well as like during the Olympics when Silverlight was used to stream the video and audio. And I did get the idea, but I'm not sure. Again, I'm not sure that Silverlight was lighter on resources. Just wanted to mention that. Still, it's still evil because it's the same thing as Flash, and Flash sucks anyway. And Moonlight is done by the same guys as Mono, and it's the Linux implementation of Silverlight. So that not just Linux, by the way, Mac OS X as well. That that those people can enjoy Moonlight. PPC Mac users. I'm sorry.
Yes,
that,
it's actually officially supported by Microsoft.
Yeah, they're officially supported. Exactly. So that you can enjoy Silverlight content on non-Microsoft and non-Mac Intel machines. And that's another area of concern because Novell says, which is of course the whole patron saint of all these technologies, is that Moonlight will be available for Linux users on any distribution. But then if you look at Microsoft and you look at that whole agreement between the two, and Microsoft has an entire frequently asked questions section about that because it's written in lawyer speak and lawyer speak in alienese, they said something completely different because they say that only Novell and intermediate recipients, whatever the hell that may be, that those are the only ones that are allowed to ship Moonlight. And it basically means that Novell and people approved by Novell or something, at least not everyone. That's basically the general idea here. So there really is a mismatch here. And again, just like in the Mono situation, as a Linux distribution, you're not in the clear shipping Moonlight, even though Novell says that, because Microsoft says something completely different. So who is right here? And that's...
Yeah, you
kind
need
of
clarity. You can't, if
there's
any question at all, it's not clear enough, because you have clarity with completely open source software. It's got absolutely nothing to hide, and you can, if it says GPL v2 at the top, then you know you can trust that you know exactly what you're doing. This, you can't, because there's other questions about it.
Well, it's not necessarily about the GPL, because...
saying that the open source software in general, you can trust it because at the top it says GPL v2. You know what you're getting. This, you don't know what you're getting. You can, it may be open source, sure, but there's other uncertainties attached to it, and that's certainly, as you say, at the distributor level. Carry on.
Yeah, what I meant to say was that even if it says JPL on the top, you're not in the clear because Moonlight probably is JPL. I have no idea, but that's not in the clear because this is not a license issue. This is a patent issue. So it can be a public domain for all I care, but if it infringes on possible patents, then you're still in trouble, whether it's JPL or whatever. So it's not necessarily has to do with open source, but it has to do with patents, and an open source doesn't really solve the patent issue, because if Microsoft has patents on Moonlight can, like I said, Moonlight could be public domain, and you could still be in trouble.
Yeah, but this is an excellent Microsoft trap, because ultimately, you know, I think both you and I are in agreement. We don't want Silverlight to become popular and common on the web. That's not a good thing. We've got enough troubles with Flash. Flash is all right for certain things, but it's overused in some places, and it's just not acceptable to be unable to access basic textual information because of Flash in the way. And we don't want that with Silverlight. Worst being is that Mono and Moonlight is only helping people adopt Silverlight, and Microsoft could at any time in the future just spring the trap and suddenly demand that Moonlight pay up.
Yeah, and that basically pull the plug and pull the rug out from underneath you.
Yeah.
So that's not really... No, it's not a good idea at all. And it's the same as with Mono. I mean, It's good that Moonlight is here for now because there is
Interoperability.
Silverlight content out there, and Denuvia should be able to see that as well, especially looking at the Olympics, of course. I believe the next Olympics will use Silverlight again.
Fun.
So that's that so it's good that even Linux users can enjoy it. But still, it's not good that I mean, at least Adobe, for all the suckage that they stand for and for all the suckage Flash is, especially on the performance level. I could live with Flash if it actually performed well, but you know, apart from that, at least you have an official player from Adobe, and you have
Yeah.
several open
Who was
implementations
the
that
two
might not be
emails?
as good, but you know, at least there's a pretty it's pretty certain that it will work now, it will work tomorrow, it will work a week from now. With Silverlight, you just don't know,
Yeah, and it's not
right?
because the thing with SWF, with the Flash specification, is that is now open. You can Adobe have finally said you can make SWF implementations, and you're free to do so. So things like Nash and etc. have got the green light. They're good to go. Silverlight, that's not the case.
So that's the biggest problem. But basically, Silverlight is Flash a couple of years ago. No certainty where it's going. No certainty that what you're playing now will play tomorrow. It's a step back. It might be a step forward performance-wise, but it's a step backwards openness-wise, so to speak.
This is a big thing for me. Obviously, I'm a web guy, and it really matters to me, because I don't want to see Silverlight becoming common. I don't want to see web pages being nothing more than an HTML tag and an object tag, and that's it. It's completely against everything that the web has managed to give us so far.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. I mean, I really liked I should mention it, your video for everyone thing that you made.
Oh right,
I think
it's not
it's
complete
got
yet, but
it's related to Flash.
yeah. I mean, I can talk about it. I'm getting an article done so people will see it on my website, and likewise, it'll turn up in OS News in the side column, won't it, or something like that. But basically, Flash is good for some things, because the internet can't solve everything. Well, sorry, so standards can't solve everything just yet. SVG isn't widely supported. It lacks a lot of things. So, in fact, I gave one example. Is probably the only single valid thing I can find on the internet for Flash is Homestar Runner. I mean, I can't live without that, and that's probably the only thing I can validate Flash for, because you can't do it with anything else. Video wouldn't work because it would just be so much stupid bandwidth, and the quality would be really low. SVG just can't handle it, etc. What I'm trying to make is basically HTML via video is available now. You've got Firefox 3.5, you've got Safari 4. You can play video natively without the need of a plugin. You can play it at a HD resolution without it killing your machine. It doesn't crash your browser all the time. You don't need a multi you don't need Google Chrome to separate all your tabs, because it's less likely that Flash is going to crash. By not having to use Flash for video, you've got less likely of having crashes in the first place anyway. And so Video for Everybody's basically it shows you videos, but it uses HTML5 if you can support HTML5. If you don't, it shows you Flash. If you don't have Flash, it shows you QuickTime. If you don't have QuickTime, it shows you Windows Media Player if you've got IE on Vista or Windows 7. And if you don't even have that, then it will show you a message where you can download the video. So it basically just plays a video with an almost certainty.
Yeah, it's really awesome actually. It's pretty good. That's why I wanted to mention it because it's really good. So you
Thanks.
guys should really watch out for the article, and I'll be sure that it will at least appear on page two. I'm sure of it, and I'm not sure if I can get it on page one because
Who else
we'll
we got
see.
web? We've got Adam Scheinberg. Huh? I don't
Yeah,
know.
maybe you should do. Maybe you should do that
I'm
one
gonna
because.
hassle him.
Yeah, we're gonna have that in because it's really good stuff. Anyway,
We are
now
dragging
what?
on.
Yeah, we did my ego. Now we did your
Media.
ego. Now we should move on. Yeah. Well.
Well,
Yeah.
now I think we've probably got to wrap this up. We are well over an hour anyway, whatever we do.
Yeah, so it's a good idea to quit. Okay.
Yeah, it's a big week. I mean, there is a lot more we could talk about, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got three Ask OS news items. We've got the thing about Apple Mail. We've just got the Scientology article. We've got this ASUS thing. Oh, it just goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
We're sorry
We
we
have to
can't
make.
cover everything, guys, but we hope you've enjoyed it anyway.
Yeah, definitely. But I think that they do.
As usual, if you can send any feedback you've got, we like receiving your emails, certainly, to osnews-crew at osnews.com. We'll reply either directly or read them out on the show next week. The comment thread is also is grateful if you want to discuss things there. And we did say last week about if you could send us any think you wanted to contribute to the show. We say, of course, should I forgot to mention that our firewall removes attachments, so don't send us any files. We can't receive them. If you could just link to them via, if you want to send us, say, a recording of yourself or of a question you've got to ask, or just feedback in general, that would also be most welcome.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that's about all to be said.
Yeah, I think that about wraps it up. So we hope you enjoyed the show, and hopefully you'll listen again next week. Well, basically, this is I think this is the end. So Tom Awada signing off.
And Croghaven signing off. Good night.
Bye bye.
Bye.